Are you ready to overcome the complexities and burdens that come with your success? Join the team at Centura Wealth Advisory in the Live Life Liberated podcast. Now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to Live Life Liberated with the team from Centura Wealth Advisory. Joining me now is your host, Derek Myron. Derek, what is today's topic?
Yeah, thanks, RJ. I'm in studio today with Legal Eagle Adam Buckwalter of LSERB. He's an estate planning attorney, focuses on income tax planning. Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Derek.
So, what are we going to talk about today? I'll give you the title and then I'll throw it back to you. We're planning for the state income taxes on capital gain asset dispositions, the do's and the don'ts. How many states have a state income tax? Is it legal to mitigate or eliminate state income tax on capital gain dispos? What are the tools available? What are the typical results? Those are the kind of things we're going to cover today. And we're going to grill Adam on all these things. Who should listen? Ultra high net worth individuals, privately held business owners, and the advisory community who serves them. And then the legal eagles on my team. This podcast, for informational purposes only, and nothing discussed today should be considered legal or tax advice. Okay, that's out of the way. Adam, thanks for joining us today. Can you give us a little bit of background about you and your firm and the kinds of who you work with and the kinds of problems you solve?
Of course. First, I wanted to thank you for having me on the show. This should be a lot of fun, interesting topic. So I'm a partner at the law firm of Wilson, Elser, Edelman, Moskowitz, and Dicker. We're a firm of 1,140 attorneys spread out over 40-something offices throughout the country. I'm based in New Jersey, and I work very closely with the estate and tax team. We focus on income and estate tax planning strategies. We represent and work with high net worth and ultra high net worth individuals and do a lot of work with entrepreneurs in advance of selling their business and working on different ways that they can mitigate the tax bite.
Fantastic. Great entry here. Yeah, I would say most estate planning attorneys focus on wealth transfer planning, and you add this focusing on income tax planning, which do you find that unique in your industry?
I find it a little bit unique, but it's been a growing practice. Over the years, I found that it's nice to save your clients' children money when they die, but it's even nicer to be able to save them money during their lifetime.
Absolutely. 40 or 50%, 20, 30, 40 years from now isn't near as good as 40 or 50% today.
Correct.
I hear that. So let's talk about state income taxes today. That's what we're going to talk about today, is largely the subject. There are 50 states in the United States. Just checking in with you, RJ. There's 50 of them.
Yes, 50.
And there are 8 of them that do not charge capital gains tax. And that's Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, and Wyoming. And those other 42 states have the audacity to charge between 2 and 14.4%. Guess where that 14.4% is, Adam? Guess which state that is?
I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say California.
The People's Republic of California. You got it. That's right. But, you know, your state isn't far behind.
New York is very close behind.
Yeah.
Especially when you tack in New York City on top of it.
They're all competing for the top spot. They just need a little bit more money to solve the problems.
Yeah.
So what can be done? How can you avoid state capital gains taxes on the following kinds of assets? Stocks and bond portfolios, business interests, crypto investments. What's available out there? Can you kind of set the framework of what's happened over the last few decades and kind of just level set for the audience?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, for a state to impose taxation, there has to be nexus to the state. I live in New Jersey. All of my income, wherever generated, is going to be taxable to New Jersey. Intangibles, stocks, bonds, a business interest, those are all deemed to be held and situs in the domicile of the owner. So if I have a business or stock, regardless of where that business operates, if I sell that stock, that capital gains is my income. And since I'm in New Jersey, I'm paying New Jersey tax. However, if you set up a non-grantor trust, which is its own tax-paying entity for income tax purposes, that trust, which owns the stock, is domiciled in the situs of the trust. So conceptually, if I set up a trust, say in Nevada or South Dakota, Alaska, Delaware, all of these no state income tax jurisdictions, when the trust turns around and sells the asset, there simply should be no state income tax.
Correct. Correct. Now, you went right to the non-grantor. And so I think you're talking about completed trusts here, where you've, is that, are you talking about?
Well, yes and no.
Not incomplete, non-grantor. Okay.
There are really, in essence, four types of trusts. For income tax purposes, a trust can be a grantor, taxed to the grantor, or a non-grantor trust.
So just to define it, though, the grantor is the person who has the property that sets up the trust and puts property in it.
Correct.
So it's the owner.
Okay. It's the owner, exactly. Yep. So for income tax, it can be grantor or non-grantor. For gift and estate tax purposes, it can be a completed gift, meaning it's outside of your taxable estate, or an incomplete gift, meaning that it's still part of your taxable estate when you die. So you can set up a non-grantor trust that is either a completed gift and you use up your exemption, your unified credit when you fund it, or you can set it up as an incomplete gift trust.
Okay. Well, let's high point the problem. The problem is, on these kinds of assets, if you live in the People's Republic of fill in the blank and you want to potentially avoid those taxes, you're going to need to set up a trust outside of the jurisdiction where you live, and you want to make sure that you don't have nexus to those assets that draws that income back to your estate. Is that a fair assessment?
That's exactly right.
Okay. So the first trust that I'm sure you were going to discuss is these ING trusts, incomplete gift trusts. What is that? A lot in the news about them. What is an incomplete gift trust?
Well, an incomplete gift trust is simply a trust that, based on the retained powers of the grantor, the person who set up the trust is still includable in their taxable estate. So when you fund the trust, you're not utilizing your unified credit, which is currently $26 million for a married couple.
So now go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so the reason that incomplete non-grantor trusts have become so popular is that when you have a substantial portfolio, when you have a business that's valued in excess of $26 million, you don't necessarily have the ability to get it into a completed gift trust. So by using the incomplete gift trust, you can still get the state tax savings and the tax benefits, but we're not utilizing exemption. We're not making a taxable gift.
Yeah. So let's just, before we get to the completed and incomplete, is the incomplete, whether depending on how wealthy you are and how old you are and all these facts and circumstances, you may say, I don't feel wealthy enough, or I'm not willing to give up control early enough in age that I don't want to do a completed gift. I want to keep it as an incomplete gift. So it's still part of my estate, but I set it up to be non-grantor, meaning I don't want the income to come back to me, so I can leave it out there and avoid those draconian state income taxes. Yes?
That's it.
And this structure design has been around since around when? 2000, maybe a little earlier. Is that?
But it was around 2000. The IRS back in the early aughts put a stop to this structure. They just refused to issue private letter rulings anymore. They couldn't wrap their head around how these things were structured, the exact tax implications. In 2007, I want to say, my partner, Bill Lipkins, pushed through the first PLR, private letter ruling, on this strategy and kind of revamped the industry again.
So this design, and there's some common states, and we've got a podcast out on it called Nings, Wings, and Dings. Sounds like Kentucky Fried Chicken, but
actually estate planning. So it stood for Nevada. Ing was a Ning. Wing was Wyoming, and Ding was Delaware. Those were some of the common states that you would set these trusts up for, to eliminate state income taxes on these kind of assets. And it worked really well. However, there are a few states that have done some things to say, well, that works too well. We don't like it. Like your neighboring state. Yeah. So the first one was New York, right? What happened in New York?
New York back in 2014 passed a statute that basically said any trust that's set up as an incomplete gift trust for federal tax purposes is treated as a grantor trust for New York tax purposes, which effectively abolished the strategy.
So you can do it, but the effectiveness just went out the window.
You can do it, but the grantor, the person setting up the trust, is going to be taxable on all of the income. So it'll be subject to New York tax.
Okay. And then California decided to follow suit this last year. Yes. Well,
Governor Newsom, in his infinite wisdom, decided to do something very similar to what New York did. And in July of 23, SB 131 went into effect, which basically said that all of the income of an incomplete non-grantor trust, retroactive to January 1st, 2023, would be attributed to the grantor and subject to California tax.
Okay, then that brings me to separating the conversation into two parts. Part one, how do we rescue all those folks that are already in those structures that the law has changed underneath their feet? And then the second, which is where we're going to spend the majority of the time, is if that Ing trust no longer works in these two jurisdictions, what else is possible? What else is available? That's the two-part prong. So which one would you like to go into first? Should we do the first one first, handle that quickly, and then dive deep into the second?
I defer to you, Derek.
Okay, let's get into rescue strategies for those of you who have an Ing already set up in either New York or California, especially California. What are the things that they could do? Are they just dead in the water? Like, what can those folks do?
They're not dead in the water, but I would break out that category into two further categories.
Okay.
There's the clients that set up these ING trusts that have not yet had any liquidity event. The trust still owns the business. And there are those clients that set up the ING trusts, had liquidity events in the sale of business. And today the ING trust is just comprised of cash and marketable securities.
So in the former, you said a business, but not just a business, could be crypto. We have a client out there with huge crypto that he hasn't liquidated yet, or equity bond portfolio. I mean, so any of those kind of intangibles that you have not had a big liquidity event where there could be throwback income tax issues is what you're really getting down to. And yeah.
That's the ugly word I haven't said yet. unlike New York, California has a very nasty throwback tax, which applies to capital gains as well as ordinary income.
So proceed with caution here. Yes.
Yes.
Are there
exactly
without, because it's all, I'm sure, very fact dependent on what taxpayers should consider. Are there solutions for those taxpayers that have set it up, had liquidity events in those trusts? Are there solutions for those people?
For the ones that have the liquidity events and just have cash and marketable sitting there?
Correct.
There are a couple of solutions to consider.
Okay.
One would be, to the extent that they have remaining credit, set up a completed gift non-grantor trust. Complete the gift.
Okay.
California, or New York for that matter, has done nothing with respect to completed gift non-grantor trusts. Another option that can be considered is using the cash and marketable securities to fund an insurance policy. The policy can invest in one or more insurance dedicated funds, IDFs, and that will cut off all tax, federal and state, going forward. For a variety of reasons, you don't typically want an insurance policy in your taxable estate as the policy continues to grow in value. But if we're just looking at state income tax planning, that is a solution that's available and should be considered.
Yeah. So there's definitely those two solutions. And depending on facts specifics, maybe there could be some additional opportunities, but it really comes down to being this, the really,
it's very fact specific, but the care has to be taken with respect to the throwback tax rules and how things can be structured. And I have had clients that simply decided, you know what, I'm going to leave California. I already have my vacation home in Nevada anyway, or Florida, move out of state and collapse the trust.
Yeah. So those are kind of the high level four things that can be done. Make it a completed gift if you have exemption. Consider private placement life insurance to wrap the assets. We often say here, listen, you either have to move your assets or move your ASS, one or the other, to make this work.
And then
fourth, depending on facts and circumstances, there may be another avenue or two available to you. Too deep for this show. I think we're going pretty deep as it is, but probably outside the scope of today.
And none of the strategies are mutually exclusive.
Yep.
You could always complete the gift with $26 million or whatever's left, and then look into the other strategies for the balance. I'm a strong believer that you want to complete the gift sooner rather than later. Get the compounding out of your estate.
Super helpful. Okay, let's pivot to the folks that set these things up. And the law changed on them, and they have not had a realized event.
Well, to the extent they haven't had a realization event, they're probably not really subject to throwback tax. Perhaps there was a little bit of income over the years. I don't know. So if throwback isn't really a concern, those trusts can be collapsed without any adverse tax impact. So I would kind of lump those people into the same category as what we do with future clients. What planning opportunities are there available for them?
Okay. So if this is you in either of those camps, strongly recommend you get very good advice here, because you can really step in it here, or you can really get some really efficient planning done to continue what was already been done. So plan wisely around your facts and circumstances. Let's pivot to people saying, hey, I have those assets, and gosh, I live in California, or I live in New York. What else is possible?
Well, anyone with a business that ultimately is going to be considering an exit should look into planning opportunities sooner rather than later. To the extent we can get discounted values and look at the current value today, and we can make a completed gift, that makes all the sense in the world to me. Another strategy that's out there to consider is for married clients, there's a form of a qualified terminal interest property trust, a QTIP trust.
Didn't you leave out one word of that, though? You said married clients. I think there's one more word in there.
What's that word?
Happily.
Strongly.
I don't think it's for any married clients.
No. You wouldn't want to consider this planning if you're contemplating a divorce.
Yeah. So there's got to be a lot of trust, correct?
Yes.
Because one spouse is going to have advantages over the other spouse. Okay. So, sorry, keep going.
This strategy, it's basically a form of a Q-tip trust.
And what's most a Q-tip? What's a Q-tip?
A Q-tip trust is a trust.
I use Q-tips every morning, one in each ear.
Well, be careful with those. You can really do some damage.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I assume it means something different here.
Well, a Q-tip trust is a qualified terminal interest property trust. It's a trust that's fully blessed under the Internal Revenue Code and regulations. It's often done, and almost all practitioners have used this, as a marital deduction trust for the benefit of the surviving spouse at death. You can also create an inter vivos Q-tip trust, a trust during lifetime.
Okay.
And the requirements are basically that the spouse has to be the sole beneficiary during his or her lifetime. And all income, which is defined as fiduciary accounting income, must be distributed to the spouse at least annually. The Treasury regulations governing grantor trusts specifically permit bifurcated trusts, where a portion of a trust is a grantor trust and a portion is a non-grantor trust.
Okay, so one portion is going to flow back to you, the owner. One portion is going to stay out there in the trust.
Correct. Now, okay. the income that must be distributed to the spouse under the terms of the QTIP trust has to necessarily must be a grantor trust. So all of the income, which has to be distributed out, is going to be picked up by the spouse and included in the California or New York return and subject to state income tax. But the principal can be structured, so that's treated as a non-grantor trust. So conceptually, if you create this form of trust and you allocate capital gains to principal, which is pretty standard, when there's a liquidity event, the sale of business, capital gains on a stock portfolio, that capital gains attributable and allocable to principal is subject to the non-grantor trust rules. And as long as you don't have California source income, it should not be subject to California tax. And this is a strategy that I've been doing for years, because out here in New York, New Jersey, we had a head start. Yep. We had the abolishment of ING trust back in 2014.
Right. So, well, not abolished them. They allowed them to still happen. It's just they rendered them ineffective.
Subjected them to New York tax.
Yeah, there we go. So that strategy in California and in New York effectively just doesn't work. It works in other states. We still use that many other states. Who's the ideal, or who's the target client? What states do they have to be in? How much money do they need to really put out there in order to make this work?
For an incomplete non-grantor trust?
No. I was still on the Q-tip. So they're in California. Understood. They're in New York. So they don't have access to an ING. So they need to look at these other alternatives. One of the alternatives is a Q-tip. In order to potentially consider setting that up, like, how much income tax are they need to be avoiding? Like, kind of quantify it for the audience to see if they're a candidate.
It's hard to quantify, but the ideal candidate is someone who's, as you said, happily married, has a lot of trust in the relationship, someone who's contemplating a sale of a business or has a large stock portfolio, and with respect to a business, where the value of the business is substantially in excess of their unified credit, where they can't make a completed gift. Another candidate is someone that needs some cash flow, because again, all of the income must be distributed to the spouse, so they are receiving cash flow from the structure, which is something unlike the incomplete non-grantor trusts.
So is it fair to say assets that are going to throw off capital gains at least $2 million or more, $5 million or more, because in both states, just make it simple, say it's 10%. We know it's higher than that, but 10% of $2 million is $200,000. You're mitigating that. Like, that's if it's throwing off, if your asset, whether it be business interests, stock, bond portfolio, or crypto, if it's going to throw off a capital gain north of $2 million or more, this probably makes a lot of sense to look into. Yeah.
To at least consider based on your individual circumstances.
Yeah. So what are the costs, setup costs, maintenance costs, and what are the risks?
Well, I mean, the setup costs are legal fees and setting up the trust, funding the trust, accounting fees in administering the trust, trustee fees depending on the trustee selected.
Can I use my brother?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Can I use
RJ? First of all, well, where does RJ live?
New Jersey.
That's not going to work.
That's not. Yeah. So relationship to trustee matters. Jurisdiction of where that individual resides matters.
Yes.
And potentially other things. I mean, believe it or not, there's some bad states that don't have high income tax, but they have other bad laws. So
Correct.
Right. So we, you know, we got to get it. It's the Goldilocks things with trustees. We got to get it just right.
Well, you need to first select a jurisdiction that you want to trust Sinestone.
Okay. Well, what if I don't have friends or family? You know, I just don't like people and I don't have somebody I trust in any one of those good jurisdictions. Then what? Am I out?
You select a corporate trustee.
Okay. I'm paying a corporate.
Which is actually my preference to begin with.
Okay.
It adds bona fides to the transaction. It's a trust fiduciary. They know what they're doing.
Okay. What are the risks?
With the Q-tip trust, one risk would be if there's a divorce.
That's a big risk.
You are making a gift to your spouse and you're ceding all control with respect to the assets transferred.
Okay.
There's no escape valve, so to speak. That trust has to be for the sole and exclusive benefit of your spouse for his or her entire lifetime.
Okay.
Another risk factor is if New York or California audits upon a liquidity event. I can't stop a state taxing authority from making arguments.
Yeah.
So there's always a risk factor there.
So you may be defending an audit. Do you guys write tax opinions on these strategies?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As a matter of practice, I'm not going to be involved in a transaction or a structure that I'm not willing to issue an opinion letter on. That being said, I don't require my clients to get an opinion letter. That's their prerogative.
Yeah.
But if I'm not going to stand behind what I'm doing, what am I doing?
Right. And what's the benefit to taxpayers who pay to get a tax opinion letter from a large law firm? What's the benefit to them? Other than they may sleep better at night. But
well,
it
lets them sleep better at night. But in the event of an audit that's unsuccessful, they'll still be subject to tax and interest, but penalties will be updated because of reasonable reliance on tax advice.
So that might, I think that fact alone might make clients sleep better at night. Like if I don't do this, I'm going to pay the tax. I have a large law firm advising me that this is appropriate and correct and legal. And if I do it, even though if I have a state taxing authority, like some people's republic of various states decide, I don't see it that way. And if the worst case thing happens, we lose, we pay the additional interest, but not the penalties. I think that's pretty big.
Yeah. And you never know when you're first met with an audit, waving the opinion letter in front of the auditor's face saying, no, this is why it works. It's fine. No guarantees, but maybe that could be enough depending on the facts and circumstances and how aggressive the board wants to get.
Yeah. I describe tax planning like running from a bear in the woods. You don't have to be the fastest. You just sure as heck can't be the slowest. So having that opinion letter may say, you know, I don't think this is the slowest person I can get. Maybe I should move on to others.
You never know.
Never know. All right. Well, what other, I know we're getting short on time here. What other potential solutions do folks that live in these People Republic states of New York and California, what other things should they consider if they're like, gosh, I was thinking about doing an ing and that's not available. What else should they potentially consider?
Well, it really goes back to the same list of ideas and strategies out there. It's very fact and circumstance specific, but there's exploring whether or not private placement life insurance makes any sense. Obviously using a completed gift, moving out of the state.
I typically want to do planning, not giving them residential advice as where to live. So we want to plan their estate, not plan where they live. So in a closing thought, what advice do you have for our listening audience? These are C-level executives, founder-led business owners listening and the professional advisors who serve them. What's a closing thought in wrapping up this topic?
Well, I think anyone that's living in New York, New Jersey, California, the high income tax jurisdictions that has a substantial portfolio kicking off a lot of income or a closely held business that they do plan on having an exit from should really sit down with their advisors and think through different strategies available to them to help mitigate the tax bite. There's nothing illegal or immoral about trying to save taxes and optimizing results.
Well said. If this is you and you have great people, fantastic. If this is you and you need a second opinion, Adam, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, I'm available by email or by phone. My phone number is 973-735-5784. My email is adam.buckwalter@wilsonelser.com.
Adam, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Super helpful, very, very valuable and timely information. If we would love to talk to you, you can contact us as well. My name is Derek Myron at centurawealth.com. It's D Myron, M-Y-R-O-N, at centurawealth.com. And the last thank you always goes to you, the listening audience. We want to thank you for tuning in today to the Live Life Liberated podcast. And until next time, make it a great day.
Thank you, Derek and Adam. And most importantly, thank you for listening to Live Life Liberated podcast with the team from Centura Wealth Advisory. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, please click the subscribe button below. This way, when the team comes out with a new podcast, it will show up directly on your listening device. We humbly ask you to share this podcast, rate it, and leave a review because this actually helps others find the show. Again, thank you for listening. And for everyone at Centura Wealth Advisory, this is RJ Malik reminding you to live your best day every day, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Live Life Liberated podcast. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Centura Wealth Advisory. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Centura Wealth Advisory. Centura is an SEC registered investment advisor with its principal place of business in San Diego, California. Centura and its representatives are in compliance with the current registration and notice filing requirements imposed on SEC registered investment advisors, in which Centura maintains clients. Centura may only transact business in those states in which it is notice filed or qualifies for an exemption or exclusion from notice filing requirements. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Tax relief varies based on client circumstances, and all clients do not achieve the same results.